So I guess my idea for a chat today, the question is going to be, is nothing sacred anymore? That's, I guess, roughly based off of a Salman Rushdie essay. But I think we'll try and keep it off religion if we can. So by sacred, I just mean something kind of looked after, cherished to the point that we can't make jokes of it, that it's above or beyond joking. So, you know, do we live in a world, a society where absolutely everything is fair game for jokes now? Is that kind of world we want to live in? And do we need to draw a line somewhere?
Hey guys, it's Red Switch the podcast. We've been away for 11 months because Bart's been pregnant and now he's had his child. And we're back. So my name's Adamia. I'm joined with Oiva.
Hi.
Bart.
Hello.
And a guest, Matt.
Hey.
All right, Matt.
Who are you, Matt?
Oh, yeah.
Why?
I'm a philosophy student. I read a lot of stuff, a lot of metaphysics and political philosophy. And I was hoping to throw some of that at these math students today. So.
And philosophy
student. And a philosophy student as well, yeah.
All right, let's take it back to the sacred point. So we've defined sacred by not just religion, because sacred is a synonym for holy as well. So we're not going to just stick onto that point. Is anything holy or sacred anymore? We're just saying, is anything sacred in terms of... So how would you define that word, sacred?
Sacred is to be beyond joke, right? So,
okay.
So I understand sacred as it's something that is sacred is always to be taken seriously. So it's beyond jest.
Okay.
So it's like a taboo then?
I don't know whether, well, let's think, will we draw a distinction between something being beyond beyond jest and something that is taboo? Because I would say taboo is more negative, right? So a taboo is something that you can't say, whereas to be sacred, to be beyond jest is more of a positive dimension, I think, right? You can talk about this thing, but just in a serious way.
Okay, I see what you mean, yeah.
Have you seen this talk by one of the guys from Monty Python about seriousness? I'm trying to remember what his name was. It's one of the oldest members. But his point was that humor and seriousness are not polar opposites in any way. That he was retelling a story of a funeral that he attended of one of the Monty Python members. And he said it was one of probably the most funny funerals or funny events that he's been to, where jokes were very openly shared. And at the same time, it was a very serious event. Because it was taken seriously, but it wasn't taken in a solemn way. People didn't have to be protective of their emotions and have to only appear sad throughout the whole thing. Because you can appreciate someone, or you can respect the dead in a way where you also laugh about their life or about the surrounding events or what made you friends or whatever. And why I bring this up is, for something to be, for you to say that you're not allowed to joke about something is not the same as saying that you can only be serious about it. Because a joke can be serious in what it actually means or what it's trying to portray. Like, just joking about something might not actually mean that you're any less serious about that topic, because it might be through a joke that you're making a point.
Okay. Yeah, right. No, I think that's an interesting point.
So you might need an example, but I can't come up with one
so
right
I guess,
now.
I guess if we're saying that the sacred, or at least that which is beyond jest, that which is to be taken seriously, you're saying that doesn't put it beyond joke, because you could nonetheless have a serious joke. I'm not sure if you can have a serious joke. I think you can probably have a respectful joke. You could have a joke in good humor, but I'm not sure if by its nature a joke is something that is non-serious.
I always find it weird to talk about something like saying something is sacred. So something that can you critique it? So because a lot of comedians, the way they joke, they're actually critiquing that particular thing.
I really like that idea. Yeah, I would suppose that jokes are precisely doing that. They're giving a critique. It's a social way or method to criticize something, and in critiquing something, we're giving it real metaphysical boundaries and the kind of definitions that thing has. So there we are really seeking, you know, the threshold of is it right or is it wrong to say things about it. So there we are really kind of fleshing out what is really at the core of that thing that we are satiring, right?
Okay, so the idea there is that, you know, a joke, whilst perhaps not being respectful or even serious, it's the critical dimension of it justifies the joking. Right?
But it can be that, like, it can be respectful. If a joke is made correctly, it's precisely that. It is respectful. Like, you don't joke about a person who's not respectful, although you do that too also. Like, I think it's a very good...
Well,
to give it its proper respect, you would want to come up with a more subtle joke, I'd say.
But also that means it depends on the setting of the joke itself. So when you gave the Monty Python example, it was a show where people went to watch him. So you would probably say something sacred. So let's say you can critique and you can joke about it. Setting matters a lot. You can't just go out in the open in a place where, you know, that's, I don't know. So let's say, I'm going to give a stupid example. Let's say phones are sacred and you can't turn a phone on. And that is in itself is a sacred act and you shouldn't be allowed to do that. But you joke about that. But you would say it would be not very cool for someone to go out in the open and just like mock that concept to people that don't want that concept to be mocked. That makes sense.
Okay. Yeah.
So let's say if something is sacred and someone can joke about it, it has to be done in a proper setting. You can't just go about doing it anywhere.
So for me, the problem here is that we were talking about it abstractly and that kind of made sense. But once you made the example of the phone, it appeared to me that what we're talking about is completely absurd. So we need a concrete example that is actually justifying of treating it like it's sacred, because a phone is something that if a comedian would come along
and joke about a phone, that would
be a good joke because it's something that needs to be criticized.
Yeah, let's come up. All right, I'll come up with a better example. Marriage. For most people, it's a sacred act. Comedians joke about it all the time.
Yep.
A lot of people don't find that comically funny, acting about, you know, how marriages fail, etc., etc. But would you say, within our society, going back to the question, I wouldn't say anything is sacred anymore.
Okay.
It's a broader plane. I think most of us could joke about anything that we want, as long as it's done in the proper way, as long as it's not purely insulting a person, you know, as long as you're not purely insulting one thing, one person individually. It's the whole concept of ideas or concepts don't have rights, people do. And so if you insult someone, so if let's say someone died and you're just going at their family and insulting them as a person, I would say that makes you A, a dick, and B, that shouldn't be allowed.
Why shouldn't that be allowed?
Well, it's because although that person's dead, that person still had rights. So I'm talking about in terms of...
We don't give rights to dead people.
No, rights to like their family members. So I'm saying if you go insult them and saying laugh at them, directly at them. I mean, I think you can make a joke about death, although that's, again, you know, it's treading lightly. You can joke about death because it's an act. But if you go around joking about one person's death and their family and laugh at them and say, you know, haha, your brother is dead, that's probably wrong. I don't think that should be
allowed. So we could have a concrete example of that. Let's say a celebrity dies, like a very, very famous one, and somebody didn't like them. They could easily joke about that, right? It's a dead celebrity. So that could happen.
And indeed it does happen, I think.
Yes, right? And I don't think... if they say it in a generic way, I think it's fine. But if you go aim it at a person, I think that is bullying, really. So let's say, I'll give an example. Bart is my friend. Let's say I died. Yeah. He might be upset a little bit. And if Matt then goes to Bart and laughs at him and says like, hi, your friend's dead. Although that sounds stupid, I'd say that would put you out wrong and that's a form of bullying, and bullying shouldn't be allowed.
Okay, so the distinction, so we're trying to give this idea of something being sacred or certainly being above joke, beyond joke, a kind of substantive form, right? So that's one thing we're trying to do here. And we're also trying to consider the difference between a joke, which we seem to be suggesting has some kind of critical element to it, right? A joke, and then some kind of bullying behavior, which it seems to be you're saying that what characterizes bullying behavior is the kind of directionality of it, right?
Yeah.
Like it's directed. And you said something about... as well, the distinction between like ideas and persons or concepts and persons. Mm-hmm. So it seems you're saying that
you know, perhaps a critique directed towards a concept is a joke. Mm-hmm. A critique directed towards a person is something other than a joke, whether it's bullying or criticism.
Yeah,
that depends. But I mean, can you clarify that at all? So
yeah, well, I think for in that case, you can joke about death, you can joke about marriages, but I don't think you can direct that joke at a person. So Ricky Gervais got a lot of hatred for doing fat jokes or doing jokes about suicide and children committing suicide. And his argument was, well, if I just did a joke, and if someone feels bad, that's, you know, that's well within their rights to feel bad about that joke. But that's not my fault. If he, before the show, said, right, who here has had a child that committed suicide? And three people put their hand up and he said, you three, and then started joking at them, I'd say that's bullying. I'd say that should not be allowed.
So it is the direction.
Yeah, it's the direction at a person, and I think that's
when you say that should not be allowed. What do you mean?
Yeah.
Who is the one enforcing that?
Yeah, so just not to go on a tangent, it's
very important when you start bringing in what's right and wrong.
Yeah,
to say whether it's enforced or not.
It sounds like it's a social issue. Like, let's say I condemn you for making that joke, then that would be wrong. It's not me enforcing a law. It's just you showing yourself as an
idiot. Matt comes to me after you died and jokes about your death, mm-hmm. that will sever my friendship with Matt,
mm-hmm.
and probably in a way that can't be resolved or forgiven.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the way that wrong that he committed will be. That's the consequence of that wrong, but he can't go to prison for it, or he can't. There's no fine to it.
But I would say that.
Yeah, that's good.
What I'm saying is you have to draw a line somewhere, and my personal line, and this is not like the line in the law here necessarily, is that once you direct something at a person, that's I would say that's okay. A disrespectful and shouldn't be allowed within society. I just think bullying in any form shouldn't be allowed.
Yeah.
If I'm critiquing a culture, I don't know. If I'm critiquing Indian people, for example, if I point at an Indian person and start saying, I don't know, haha, you smell like curry, I would say that's beyond offensive and that's bullying, right? But if I made an Indian joke, people and say, well, you know, like, and make a generic statement in a comical sense in the right setting, that's fine, I'd say.
Okay, because I think these are interesting distinctions you're drawing. My question would be, so it's wrong, it's improper in perhaps some kind of social sense, but not a legalistic sense. It's, mm-hmm. it's improper for you to direct, you know, very hateful words towards me. You know, that's a problem in your life. But I wonder, you know, and you're saying, well, it's because you're a person. It's wrong to direct it at a person, at an individual. But for, you know, for perhaps someone with strong religious commitments, strong ethical commitments, the concept, the idea, the ideology that you're directing the criticism towards, they could identify that with that so strongly that for them, and indeed for the external observer as well, that constitutes an attack on that person. Mm-hmm. So I think there's a question to be asked as to whether directed, let's not call it hate speech, but certainly problematic speech towards a concept or an idea, when someone identifies with that so strongly, whether or not that constitutes problematic speech towards an individual as well.
Yeah, and I get what you mean in terms of the... that it's hard to draw the line, because for some people, I'll go back to the marriage point. Some people, marriage is so sacred, someone joking about the marriage is an attack upon their sacred thing, and that's an individual attack. I would say that's probably not true, even though the person making the joke knows that this is a fine line they're walking on. When someone makes a joke that's offensive, they know it's going to offend some people, whether it's Dave Chappelle doing jokes about transgender people, Louis C.K., that's a bad example, or Ricky Gervais doing joke on fat people. He knows people are fat. You know, he knows that there's not a problem with fat people. So when he jokes, he is almost walking the line in offending people. So maybe people that are in the crowd that are fat might feel uncomfortable. So people, let's say, joking about Indian people, the Indian people in the crowd might feel uncomfortable. The reason I think that's fine is because he's not pinpointing and aiming his attack on one person or like two or three people. He's just arguing, he's just taking that sacred thing and mocking it to critique it.
What about mocking a politician? Is that fine?
Depends on what kind of are you mocking his politicians, that his what he's implementing in his rules and laws? Well, then yes, you can. If you're mocking a thing, if you're just going around calling Donald Trump fat, then I think that's a form of bullying, because that's not at all to do with his job.
When I think his polemics, it certainly wouldn't constitute a critique of him in any
Why is that relevant? Why is, if you're mocking him being orange, again, that's not at all.
But Trump is, worth questioning whether you want your president to be orange. Quite serious. Perhaps that's worth thinking about, because do you really want your president to be orange? I certainly would question that. Like, there's something wrong with the president being orange.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's like I said, like,
depends. That's a joke.
Yeah,
but
I know.
The point is that there's nothing wrong with that joke, and there's also nothing wrong with the fact that maybe it's also targeting Donald Trump in a way that's baseless, that doesn't actually question anything about his politics or the work that he's going to do. And there's nothing wrong with that, even though it might offend some people who are advocates of Trump. Even though it offended them, but it's in their eyes.
Well, I'll put it this way. If I have to implement this in sort of some sort of law, so you'd have to... At the end of the day, the society decides what's right and what's wrong. So if you make a joke about a certain community, let's say you go to Israel and joke about something that's dear to their hearts, it's society that will decide whether people around that will decide whether that was funny or they don't like you at all and you should probably leave. Within the UK, we're pretty lucky that we can joke about anything. I don't think it's in the constitution, we don't have constitution, but freedom of speech is there. Or maybe it's freedom of expression, I think, in the UK, where you can freely express your opinion about an idea and a concept. And an example is Milo Yiannopoulos. I don't agree with what he does in terms of, he basically goes at people. So he did this, I don't know whether you know, but he did this joke about when there was a female Ghostbusters out and there was a black female actress. And he said, oh, it's a good thing that they had a black male actress in the film as well. And I think that was,
okay, so the one joke that he keeps on making is that he likes black guys because he's gay.
Yeah.
And then he said that he thought one of the main leads was really hot.
Yeah.
And that he'd want to, that it looked like one of his boyfriends.
Yeah.
So it's just, it's stupid. It's just picking fun at stuff in a way that isn't actually, the fact that it's making no point is part of the joke.
Yeah. But what I would say is, I don't think he should be legally go to prison for that. I'm not saying that, but I would say if I was one of the people hiring him, I'd fire him, because that's A, not relevant, and that's just unnecessary humor, because you're aiming an attack at a person. Doesn't matter.
I like that. I like that, because what you're saying is the way you have certain values and you judge people by those values. Yeah. So if they make points or joke in ways that are not actually making jokes that, or if they criticize people in baseless ways, that's, you will then not employ them, or you would fire them. So the way you act with those people, the way you build their relationship with them, or the way you decide to behave around them, depends on what you, your judgment of them. But it doesn't extend further that you instantiate something in a law.
Yeah.
It's just that, well, too bad for them that they're so superficial, they won't get any opportunity from me to work with them, or they won't be friends with me.
Yeah.
And that's a very nice thing, that the way you exert your values and enforce them is just on the level of you as a person and the people you come in contact with. Yeah.
Or if I was working under him, I would just leave.
You could leave. Yeah.
You have the right to leave. Basically, what people, these people that go around mocking other people about the way they look. So you see this in Facebook and the media all the time, when you see, like, people joke about Theresa May's hair or the way Donald Trump looks. People, you know, the politicians, that's not relevant to what they are. It's like me critiquing Hitler and making the main critique about his mustache. That's not what's wrong with Hitler.
That is what's wrong with Hitler, right?
Well, yeah, that's actually the main point.
That is the main point.
Isn't that the main thing he did that was wrong?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just a really weird mustache.
Yeah, like,
so if he didn't have that, everything would be fine.
Yeah, everything he did, there was nothing else that he did was wrong.
So I think it's interesting, right? Because obviously, there are certain kind of points in a discussion. I think, you know, Nazism, National Socialism, Hitler seems to be that line that, you know, once you reach that point in the conversation, that's kind of it, right? Like everyone agrees that's immoral, right? But equally, I would say, that seems to me exactly the kind of thing that you wouldn't want to joke about, right? Like this joke that the worst thing about Hitler was his mustache. Mm. It seems to me that actually that is the kind of joke that I don't think we should be making. Quite clearly. And I mean, perhaps that's the subject matter of the joke. Someone would say, well, that's precisely where the source of the humor comes from, is because of this just distance between what was clearly the problem and what we're talking about now. You know, it's an irony of distance, but
it's absurdity. It's like, it's funny to joke about saying that the mustache is the worst thing he did.
Yeah.
Because that's absurd, a statement to make.
Yeah, but then we're
laughing at the stupidity of it.
But I wonder whether we should be laughing at that, because the grounds on which we measure that absurdity is so serious that it shouldn't even be a joking matter that we could, you know.
Well, so why is it funny to people?
So I think okay.
Maybe morality comes a bit after your initial reaction.
Yeah.
Your initial reaction, this is funny. And then suddenly you have to stop yourself and realize, wait a second, that's offensive and I'm not allowed to laugh about that.
Yeah, I think humor...
Yet
like,
before we start judging it, there is something about it that we find, or some, like in my sense of humor, this is the case.
Yeah.
I find it funny before I find the need to judge it. And I've also gotten used to justifying jokes by the fact that I find them funny.
Yeah.
If they're funny, then it served its purpose despite it being offensive.
Yeah, okay. So I mean, I think there's an interesting point there that certainly there's this kind of knee-jerk dimension to the experience of a joke, right? Like often you're either immediately repulsed or you laugh at the joke. And then there seems to be that afterthought, which is, maybe that was a bit more funny than I gave it credit for. Like, I think a lot of people probably, they joke back and then they giggle about it after. Or I think you laugh at it and then you think, well, you know, is this really the kind of thing that I'd be laughing about? Mm-hmm. But I guess what I want to really kind of steer with this then is that, well, you know, it seems to me important, and I guess this is why perhaps I chose this topic. It seems to me important that there are things that we shouldn't joke about, that should be handled a lot more sensitively than they are currently. And I think that that means that, well, you know, I don't know if I hold that absolutely. I'm all for irreverent humor. I'm all for rude, crude humor. My favorite comedian is Jimmy Carr. But I think there is one very small space where that's acceptable and a lot of places where that's not acceptable. Mm-hmm. So I guess what I want to say is whether you guys consider, you know, is there really anything, can you conceive of anything that you simply do not want to hear and you think shouldn't be made light of? And then, or would you, you know, moderate that claim somewhat and have it in a certain location, i.e. the public space, the public domain?
Well, there are things that I don't want to hear, but I know that the people that are saying it have the right to say what they're saying. If that makes sense. I have well within the rights to say that a joke is not funny and I didn't enjoy that joke or I find it offensive. You have the right to take offense to anything you want.
Mm-hmm.
If I make any joke, you have the right to take offense. But you have no right to say that you are not allowed to say that, if that makes sense. So if you, let's say, there's a joke, like Jimmy Carr is a pretty offensive... His jokes are pretty offensive, you know?
Yeah, always.
he delivers some pretty lethal one-liners. And in that setting, I get when you go to his shows, you're expected to be, he can pick you out and he will mock you. You as a person have the right, when you're there, to not enjoy that. Suddenly be like, actually, I don't enjoy this.
Or to indeed leave, right?
And yeah, you can well within your right to get up and leave. And people have done that in many comedian shows that they leave. But you have no right to say that this person can't say what he just said. You don't have the right to say that.
Yeah, and I would agree with you within that domain, within that space of the comedic space, right? Mm-hmm. I like for instance, again, Monty Python's a good example with Life of Brian, right? Because that's like cinema is one of these interesting kind of areas, I think, where you do start to encroach on the public a little bit more, right? Like, so Life of Brian was, a religiously themed comedy, right? It was a comedy about the life of Christ, or someone confused for Christ. Now, you know, so I guess I want to say, because I certainly would agree that there are comedic spaces. So I'd say, you know, a concert hall, Jimmy Carr's concert, that is one of those comedic spaces for me. I'd like to think a film is also one of those spaces, but a lot of people would disagree with that. But then, you know, take that one step further, I don't think the public is one of those spaces. I think that there are things that you can't say in public. So I guess a film is an interesting intermediary there.
Mm. Going back to the public thing, I think the people that decide whether it's a relevant place is the people around you. So let's say if you're in a meeting, you're working at a company and you make a joke. If the table laughs, then that was not a bad joke to tell. But if the table just looks up, that means clearly it was an inappropriate place. So it's not just one person. It's the majority of the people that you're doing it to that decide whether that was appropriate, if you like. And that was, that was rude or whatever. So it's sort of built within our society. So if I say a joke about anything and you three don't laugh, I know that that joke was not necessary to say, or either not funny or way too offensive.
Yep.
So we do that anyway in society. Like, rarely do you see someone that's just joking and no one's laughing, and then them continue to joke unless they've completely got something wrong with them. You know, rarely do you see like a comedian stand up
unless they're drunk.
Joke after joke and no one's laughing. So, you know, comedians know what the level is. So when Jimmy Carr did this thing where he just sort of revved up his offense for a joke, so he started very low and he started revving up, and yep. see when the when people stop laughing. You know, that's kind of what we do in the society. When we meet people, we realize whether we can say this or whether we cannot. And you're not as sort of blasé about it as Jimmy Carr, but you kind of take little steps and realize, where can I like take this? And we do this kind of like subconsciously when we meet another person. Yeah.
So I think that's certainly some interesting points there, because I think you're right that, you know, in the public space, we do regulate. I think that that's important. And indeed, you know, even within a group of friends, right, I'd say that, you know, my question there would be, well, does joking form the basis of the friendship, or much rather is the friendship the basis of the jokes, or do they kind of mutually, you know, kind of build each other up from the ground, right? So I think, you know, in public spaces where we regulate the negative dimension of joking, which is to say we stop ourselves from joking, mm-hmm. but there's also that way in which there's the growth of the joke, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you start off with, you know, relatively serious encounters with people, and you just develop this very joking, I mean, we could say anything to any one of us right now, and I'm certain that no one would take serious offense to it, right? Mm-hmm. And you cultivate that environment. So I think there's two dimensions to the kind of the movement of the joke in public. Mm-hmm. So I'm just interested to hear your guys' thoughts on that, and how much you limit it. So, you know, how careful do you have to be with the cultivation of a joke in the public space, or the limiting of a joke in a public space?
Okay, so I think it would be important to make the distinction clear. So we're talking about the public sphere, right? So as opposed to a private sphere, because right now we are in a private sphere.
Yeah.
Although the podcast is not. So we're bringing the podcast to a public sphere.
Mm.
So if I now made a joke, a very racist one, that would be pretty terrible, I'd say. So, yeah, there are limits, definitely.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you do that all the time. We just have to edit all of them out.
He's made 5 so far. And the fifth one, oh boy, you don't want to hear it. You don't want to hear it. We had to restrain him from that. We had to take away his microphone for about 15 minutes. It's okay, he's allowed on again.
Right, that's why I was quiet for so long.
I censor myself, mm-hmm. when it comes to jokes. There are certain people that I surround myself with where I implicitly know that I can't joke about the same things.
Mm-hmm.
And I was wondering why I censor myself in those cases. And it's not because I think the jokes are wrong. It's because I think they'll be misunderstood. And there's a distinction there. It's not because I think it's offensive. And usually I let myself go and I allow myself to be offensive and say something that's unethical. No. I say something to make a point about it being unethical, but I know that in some spheres that'll be misconstrued and therefore I can't say it. So I think that's an important point, because I don't think people censor themselves because they know the jokes are bad on an ethical level, but they just think that the crowd won't be able to understand that in some way it is actually ethical, or in some way it's trying to make a point.
Okay. Yeah. No. I definitely see what you mean. So if we're talking about this idea of the growth, the cultivating jokes, limiting jokes in the public space, you're saying that, well, you limit them not because of the content of the joke, but much rather because you're worried that the joke would actually be taken seriously all along, right? Like that almost seems to be the concern with jokes in the public space, is that people take it seriously.
Yeah. That's the worst case scenario, I think. You're telling a joke and everyone is just like staring at you blankly, and then you're saying, that was supposed to be a joke, guys.
Yes. During the Trump election, I walked around the Warwick Library
with
a Make America Great Again hat on.
sense.
Beautiful.
And a lot of people looked really upset, but they didn't approach me. And the people who did, I mentioned to it that it was in fact a joke. And people who really stared at me for a long time, I also clarified it. But I thought that was an interesting experiment, because it's like, I'm going into a sphere that does not appreciate this as a joke and will take it seriously, mm-hmm. and will be offended in some way. Mm-hmm. And I'm showing them, you know, maybe I'm displaying to them that it's not actually an attack, or I'm trying to demonstrate something. And maybe I was doing this experiment without knowing why I was doing it, but something in me told me that this would be interesting. And it was, but again, it's very vague. It's like when you break these rules that we've set up in the public space about what you can't say or what you can't wear, weird stuff starts to happen, because this idea of certain statements being attacks in a violent, aggressive sense, they break down once you show that by making a statement like that, no attack of the sort actually happens. It's just words in the end, or it's just a piece of clothing. And that's, to me, at the core of this whole issue, which is that speech is not an attack. And you can't actually physically hurt someone with speech unless you tell them, like, well, there's fire and that causes people to cause a stampede or something crazy. And that's where we set the restrictions in hate speech or in like a very dangerous speech. But I think with our society nowadays, we've made a decision to start thinking of speech as a very dangerous thing, and that you can attack people through speech. And this is where it gets difficult with bullying, because bullying is a form of attacking people through mm-hmm. speech. But how do you say what's right and what's wrong? Because criticizing an individual in and of itself is not necessarily wrong. And maybe doing it bad natured is, yeah, it's in bad nature, but it's still not wrong. There might be some truth, as much as people wouldn't like to believe it, there might be some truth in a critique that's in bad nature. So where do we set the line? The way I've decided to cope with it is saying that there is no attack in speech. Speech is the least violent way you can actually make a point or discuss things or make a change.
I completely agree with you there. I think speech is that kind of a medium, as well as a like device, that is able to free us. It's really that device that does truly free us. Like, otherwise, we are in a private sphere. We're never entering the public sphere unless we open our mouths. That's really when we get free and we become, you know, equal, you know.
There are many discussions I've had with you, Oiva, where it concerned perhaps religion or spirituality or something quite important to us, where you'd make a point of something that you completely believed in, that was central to the way you lived. And I had to say very blankly that I disagreed, or that I couldn't find a way to believe it myself, yet I found the idea you were presenting admirable. Or sometimes maybe you say something that I completely am against on even moral grounds. But the fact that we can talk about it and have a dialogue is much, it's the best thing we could do versus turning it into something that is in fact violent.
Yeah, so
and in fact physical. Because that's how you can always change it. If you can't come to a conclusion, or if you can't agree on something, you can just fight the person.
Yeah. So,
and that's not a good thing to go through. We should stick with speech, and we should allow ourselves to disagree and to have to get into difficult situations and tensions through speech, because we don't want to get into those same situations through physical interactions.
So I have a citation here from my favorite clinical psychologist, you know, evolutionary psychologist. He's the internet daddy of 2018. Is it worth the risk? So Jordan Peterson says this, and he says that it's the rage of Canadian public when they are making this pronoun hate speech. Yeah, if you don't use the preferred pronouns by some trans people, you will they can file a report.
Bill C-16.
Yeah. Anyway,
they can enforce that you're referred to by certain pronouns.
Yeah, and Peterson believes that it's an important aspect for an individual, for them to grow, that they can open their mouth, because once they actually open their mouth, even if they say something offensive, a joke, there's another person who can criticize that joke and tell them that was just a shit joke, man. And that will really build up their character. That's what speech is. That's often what joking is. It is precisely that, like growing.
Yeah, okay. That's socially. Because we've talked about, you know, jokes as a legitimate means of criticism, and now you're talking about, you know, the joke itself being the subject of criticism, which I guess is ultimately what we're saying here, right? We are critiquing in some way, joking.
Yeah.
You know, and what you're suggesting is that, you know, and it seems, you know, this corner of the room is definitely for kind of unimpeded free speech.
Yeah, definitely.
It seems there's the kind of suggestion that, well, you know, free speech allows us to grow and develop our personalities. Free speech is also the better alternative.
It's what makes us free. It's what makes us free.
Yeah, so an even stronger claim there. So, you know, the freedom of speech is constitutive in our freedom, and that, you know, it's just the better alternative to clashing heads, ultimately. Yeah. I think these are all great points. My trouble is, though, at the point where, and you touched on it, and I'd just like to go back to that a little bit. I think that when speech becomes the motivator for violent action, and it seems to me very hard to suggest that, you know, irreverent critical speech couldn't be conceived as motivating to harm sometimes, you know. So I'm just wondering your thoughts on that, you know, a joke that on the part of the joker is meant in good faith, and as an open critique, ends up being motivation for some quite violent behavior. Mm-hmm. That to me seems to be the real power of speech.
Yes, I see what you mean. So you're talking about, I'm guessing, when you say speech sort of empowering violence, when I listen to certain people on YouTube, like Ben Shapiro, who I don't agree with on a lot of things, because he's so good with his words and his speech, he convinces me, like, oh, that's a genuine argument. So where does that line draw? So when someone's a white supremacist, let's say, you know, he's very good with his words, would you say that's harmful because that could incite violence? Let's say, you know, he's so good with his words that he converts, you know, even a small minority of people to agree with him.
Yeah.
And then when does that stop?
Well, here's a question then, right? Like, you know, presumably, you know, it seems you guys are saying that and I would agree, and this is as much a question to myself, that in the right environment, you could make a joke, you could make a racist joke in the right environment. You know, Jimmy Carr will make a racist joke from time to time. He'll make a sexist joke, right? But then what happens if it's a white supremacist that is making that joke, or an extreme misogynist that is making that joke, right? Does the identity of the individual who is joking have any effect on the joke?
No.
I wouldn't
do that because again it's a social it's society. I wouldn't enforce that within law itself, but it's the society itself saying it. So when you go watch a white supremacist and he does these racist jokes and he keeps doing them,
can we point to some white supremacist? Because I don't want to fight
Richard Spencer.
Yeah, we go.
Richard
Sorry.
Spencer.
Now we don't have a specter, like a straw man.
Richard Spencer. Let's say he's joking openly about non-white people.
Mm-hmm.
Me as a person, I wouldn't be completely against not going to watch him talk, just so I could sort of see what his point is. But
I've actually, now coming to think of it, I've never heard Richard Spencer make a joke in poor taste that was racist. I think that's actually really funny, because that's the only white supremacist I know of that I've heard some talking of, and he always talks very seriously about these, well, his justification for there being, or no, his explanation for there being a superiority there. And so,
well, I think, again, it's a society that will...
Okay, let's use Trump. Trump is a very popular one. Trump recently called certain countries, you know, assholes.
Yeah.
And I think that's pretty racist.
Right? You can say shithole on this podcast. There's no...
Okay.
There's no problem with that.
I thought this was a Christian channel. No. Anyways.
I think God has just left the podcast. I'm sorry, guys. He got upset by my swearing. I'm incredibly sorry.
Oh, shit. Your Trump.
Yeah, so exactly. Trump might be a white supremacist in making such a joke, right?
Well, I don't think Trump's a white supremacist.
No, no, but at least in that instance, because he's saying this country is shit and this country is mainly, you know, not white. So.
It's indirectly supremacy.
At least implicitly there, yeah.
Because you're pointing to a superiority between countries.
But again, like...
But then again, he's the leader of the freest country in the world, so it's hard to make this argument.
We realize that, yes, what he said was wrong and no one necessarily accepts it. But are we saying, should he be trialed for that?
No.
So even if a white supremacist makes these jokes in the environment, so he's not just going around, but he says it in the environment, can he be trialed for that? I would say no.
Also, if you want to have a hypothetical that's really difficult to deal with,
okay.
What if you have a white supremacist who makes a racist joke that's funny?
Mm-hmm.
Again, it's a hypothetical, so I don't give you an example, so... This might not be a thing that happens, but what if that did happen? Where you can stand back and say, that joke in and of itself is funny and it's racist.
In my opinion, I would say that the reason why certain jokes, comedians like Alan Carr are funny, is when you look at them and they make this joke, you don't actually think they genuinely believe that. If that makes sense. They're saying something that's so, if you like, taboo that people shouldn't say. He's saying something that he doesn't normally say in an environment when he's just having a conversation about...
It also goes further than that, that it's clear from their performance that they don't mean it. Because otherwise, they wouldn't be saying it. Like, you can see that they know why it's funny.
It's like if a Nazi says an anti-Semite joke, you wouldn't laugh because they genuinely believe that. Their viewpoint is...
You can see when an anti-Semitic joke is... bad-natured or good-natured, regardless of whether the person is actually anti-Semitic.
Hitler versus PewDiePie, you know. PewDiePie, even though it was almost career suicide what he did with the, you know, when he did that YouTube video when he paid people to say...
Oh, my God. Yeah, I saw that recently.
And he got a lot of hate for that, and rightly so. The society decides whether someone gets hate for what he did. Mm-hmm. So he basically paid two Indonesian people to hold up a sign saying death to all Jews. He just wanted to see what people would do for money. And there was a lot of backlash on that, and I think that's fine because what he did was stupid. But if now, let's say, an anti-Semite did that, I would not find that, not even like, I don't think people that found that funny would find that at all funny because they know that was a genuine act.
Because you'd see that the anti-Semite finds it funny to pay for people to make a statement saying kill all Jews because they agree with it and they're like, ha, someone's actually putting it up.
Yeah.
And that's not the kind of, you're not laughing with them then because... They're laughing about something completely different from what you're laughing about.
It seems that we're saying then now that regardless of... Or maybe we still hold that there are certainly domains where this is more acceptable than others. The social domain, you need to regulate yourself a little bit. But it seems we're saying that there is a lot to do with the person who's making the joke, right? Like, that if the belief corresponds with the subject matter of the joke, then we got a problem. I guess a question I put there as a kind of inversion of this would be, is it not the case that in making a strongly anti-Semitic or a strongly racist joke, you are, in virtue of that, anti-Semitic or in virtue of that racist?
Not necessarily, because that joke itself is you're almost for temporary, like 5 seconds, you're acting like a person that is an anti-Semite.
No, I think it's very situational. You would have to ask the person, does he hold those values? Otherwise he doesn't, because, I mean, making a joke doesn't make somebody believe in something.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Well, I think
it also begs the question of how well people know themselves, because it might be you are anti-Semitic in a way that you never fought it. You always denied it. But when it comes to the way you utter stuff, suddenly it appears to you that indeed you are in some way anti-Semitic. So this is actually another important thing about speech and why it should be free, is because through talking, you can discover a lot about what you think yourself. And you can discover things that maybe you've never actually expressed and never had to articulate that are kind of strange or are peculiar about what you think. And once you're forced to discuss things, you might find your own mistakes in it. You might find reasoning, or you might find steps and gaps in your logic that are wrong and therefore be able to correct yourself. And this is an important thing about speech and about dialogue, is that people are anti-Semitic and people are racist, and you're not going to make them un-anti-Semitic or un-racist by not allowing them to talk about this or by turning it into an illegal thing. It has to be something that they can openly admit and see that they're judged for, and maybe in response get convincing arguments to not be racist, because that's the way you can actually make someone change their beliefs.
These points ring a big ring with me with John Stuart Mill's on liberty. So he's talking about, you know, effectively put in some parameters on speech, and he has this harm principle, but the gist of it is that, you know, he really thinks that free speech is important precisely because of the things you've been saying, that it provides a platform where you can defend your views, or indeed you could come to find out your view is wrong. You know, a big part of a liberal state is that we have a space where we can uncover our own errors. I think that's certainly true. But it's this kind of dimension of, well, he's going to put parameters on that, you know, it can in no way lead to harm. And I think it's very, very tricky. And something that I really struggle with is, you know, cause we've been talking about a lot of points now, you know, we've talked about beliefs and public spaces and things like this, but, you know, I'd be really interested to hear for you guys, like, exactly what parameters you would put on speech, joking, just speech in general as well. Cause I mean, we've branched out of jokes to just free speech really, but what kind of parameters would you really identify, you know, to stop us from harming, or when do you think it is the case that you harm?
So you're saying what kind of law, if we had the choice, what would we put down as this is, the difference between when it goes from just freedom of speech and critiquing to attacking another person.
When is it hate speech, I guess, would be my question. When is it hate speech?
And you're asking whether hate speech should be illegal?
Okay, well, I think, for myself personally, it kind of goes without saying that hate speech should be illegal. What is it for you guys? What is it that characterizes something as hate speech? And it might be that we touched on these points already, but just I'd love to get in kind of like a formal point from you guys.
So for me, hate speech is the most is only direct statements of incitement of violence, or things that are dangerous. So shouting bomb on a plane is an example of that.
So threat.
It's very direct. It's a threat in a way that is direct, immediate, this is going to happen right now. Those kinds of threats are hate speech to me. And besides that, everything is okay. So you can bully people. Well, what I'm saying is actually quite negative.
Those aren't actually hate speech.
That allows you to say, extremely bad things towards people in the worst taste you can imagine. It's not just poor taste. It's you could say something absolutely awful to anyone. Mm-hmm. And that's what I'm advocating for. Mm-hmm. But What I should also clarify is that I judge people by much higher standards than simply what constitutes a hate speech and what doesn't. If you bully people in poor taste, I would not appreciate your presence, and I would not make any effort to spend time with you, and I would probably even make effort to not spend time with you.
Yeah, so...
And it's worth noting that for me, there's a big difference between individual preferences for what constitutes good and bad speech and what should be enforced by law as mm-hmm. hate speech. Mm-hmm. So you can have, and this also allows everyone to make up their own minds on what constitutes hate speech, because the way you go about your life and who you interact with can be down to your own judgment. And that's kind of nice that we're allowed to differ in those things. Yeah. But there should be a small basis of hate speech that we can enforce, where we can blame people for causing a lot of catastrophe by saying something.
Okay. Yeah,
it's limited to just these.
So the thing is, if we allow people free rein of their mouths, you know, let them speak, then what will happen is the idiots will just be ostracized. They are so antisocial that nobody will just befriend them. That's the plan.
The problem I find with that sort of allowing someone to be bullied is, you say that incite violence. Let's say I'm very, very famous. Okay. Let's say I'm really famous, then I just point at one person, on Twitter, go on one person, someone that's not famous, and just start saying, this guy is fat, right? Just say that, right?
Mm-hmm.
The amount of hate that guy will get is a lot, mm-hmm. because I'm famous and my fans will be like, ah, this guy's fat. So you're not just doing bullying by yourself, you're inciting mass bullying, which can, you know, end up the person taking his own life. It could end up being anything. Because that's why a lot of...
But the other person can, you know, shut their phone and not be on Twitter.
Okay, but then people that know him will laugh at him, and there'll be... It's not just that. Let's say if Donald Trump just tweeted at me saying, haha, Indian, I'm pretty sure people will know about it. There wouldn't just be Twitter. It'll be everywhere, like, in terms of people will know about it. That's, I mean, I'm talking like a lot of like people like Marlon Yiannopoulos, that's what they talk about punching up. H3. They say one of the good things, one of the bad things about them getting big is now they can't punch down on smaller YouTube channels because that's just bullying and that will incite mass hate on them.
Okay, so that this is interesting then. So your point would be something along the lines that actually the demarcation of hate speech, what really identifies hate speech, or at least makes it dangerous, is the element of power there, right?
Yeah.
And I mean, there's a lot of thinking on language and power and you know, how language discloses certain power relations. But that would certainly be an interesting way to take this, you know, that actually the it seems that language is a tool for critique in one direction, and it's a tool for kind of some real big problems in another direction, right? So is there a directionality on jokes and on abusive language and abusive sentences?
The murky waters you get into when you bring power into this, which is worth bringing in, because there is differences within people's power. Some people are more powerful than others in, for example, how big an audience they have, and that, as you've rightly stated. But the murky waters you get into is assuming that it's only power and that there isn't an element of truth that we can agree on. Because let's say someone has done something wrong and you criticize it even though you're more powerful than them, then the element of the fact that you're criticizing them in a correct manner about a thing that is an actual issue shouldn't be cancelled out by the fact that you're more powerful than them, and to dismiss your critique based on it being bullying because it's punching down. So that's where it gets difficult when you start saying, well, you can't punch down because that's bullying. Because what if you're making a right point?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, but that's where it takes, like, there's the difference. So if, let's say, that person, going back to, like, a popular person, someone that's, you know, not that popular, and let's say is overweight, and let's say you're critiquing his idea. So let's say, this is what I think. If you critique that, that's fine. But if you start calling him fat, the perfect example right now is Logan Paul at the moment, when he did something terrible, recorded a dead person. You would say, you know, in Japan, suicide is a sacred thing. People, you know, it's a topic people don't openly talk about.
Yeah. Well, the problem with that was that it wasn't recording of, like, he didn't publish a recording. It was more like a live show.
Yeah.
So it got, but also, on the camera.
You had
live.
Like, me and Bart were discussing this. Before, it took a day for people to realize this is wrong. And by that, most of his fans don't think it's wrong. So let's say I'm a musician, right? Let's say I'm Ed Sheeran, and there's a fan base that would defend me to pretty much a very big level. So let's say I make an overweight joke, there'll be a mass group of people that would say, you know what, like, I agree with him, that guy is fat. Like, he didn't say anything wrong, technically he is fat, but that's still bullying and you're inciting violence upon that guy. You can say, yeah, just switch off your phone, but that's not ending the argument at
all.
Actually,
I'd like to bring this back to earlier when I was talking about, you know, jokes can really, I think they originate for the most part with the basis of friendship, and I think they also generate friendship, right? And I think that actually, is it not the case that something we're missing here is that there is it's about the place of that person within certain structures, right? So, you know, in a classroom, let's say you're one of the children that is less popular in the classroom and you're the subject of jokes. Well, you know, you're not integrated within that group, and the joke only acts to further exclude you. If you are with your friends, the joke is actually a bonding relationship, I think. And I think this is why perhaps, you know, when you look at a lot of the things that we can now joke about in the UK, we can joke about, for instance, I don't want to say joke about it, but we talk quite liberally about Christianity, right? Like, we do. But I think very much that's because we are based upon a Christian society, and that, you know, we are integrated in such a way that joke is, it's not as discriminatory as it would be otherwise. So I think that actually, is it not the case that the grounds for the appropriateness of the joke is the degree to which you're incorporated within the society or the group that makes the joke?
That's a good point. That was actually one of the speakers actually talked about this, where they talked about a male saying the word bitch, right? And he said that, I would never say the word bitch to my wife or my wife's friends, but they, when they're in their community with wife and her friends, they use the word bitch all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what you're saying. I mean, that's a smaller community, but you're saying as a nation, we are, you know, most people are,
bring wench back.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Are very sort of Christian. the values of the country are very Christian.
Certainly
the so values, now yeah. our community is Christian, so we can joke about Christianity, but we should not be allowed to joke about things that our community is not integrated within.
I think like, for instance, now that we're at an interesting time in UK history where communities are, you know, very diverse communities are integrating within the majority community, right? And I think that right now we need to be very careful about what jokes we make. I think maybe in 5 or 10 years' time, when the communities are more integrated, there's the ground for the joking. And actually the joking can be the basis of a very strong relationship.
I love what you said about in a classroom, how jokes or how jokes work there, because it really struck a chord with me, where a joke which can be construed as bullying when the cooler kids in class yeah. bully the one that's less cool, it is both something that's offensive that they want to get a reaction out of, but it's also an invitation for them to join the group
mm-hmm.
in a way that if they respond in a way that's interesting, they'll be accepted.
Okay.
And that's how I saw it, because any time where I received like jokes that were in poor taste, that were intended to bully me,
so you were the receiving,
I was able
it, yeah.
to work it out in a way that made me accepted, because I responded in a way that they liked. And I retaliated.
Guys certainly do this. I mean, guys will test each other.
This is it's testing.
I had a similar experience.
If you get the joke,
yeah.
you're integrated in a way because there's a mutual understanding that you'll be made a joke of in a way that at the end of the day you're all supported.
Yeah.
Let's spin it around though. Let's say you're the bully yourself, right?
Yeah.
I know you're probably not, but let's say you're the bully yourself and you make a bully to someone that's less popular. And if they don't react and they kind of sulk a bit, you know that you've offended them and bullied them and they're not willing to be friends with you. So would you say it's going to be kind of wrong if you continue doing that joke? Or would you say you would back off then?
I'd say I wouldn't personally want to do that. Yeah. Once I see that they can't handle a joke
yeah.
and they didn't understand that it was an invitation, or they responded to it in a way that they kind of rolled over and said, okay, I can't retaliate.
Hmm.
And they're not in a sense strong enough for that. Hmm. Then I will leave them alone, because what happens once you realize that they're not strong enough, people tend to continue because it's fun, because you point out to everyone else that you're more powerful than them. And it becomes a play of just how powerful you are. And I'm not interested in that. So once I realize that I've overstepped a boundary that they weren't able to maintain, then I leave it.
I would say,
but I know that bullies, the whole point of bullies is that they like to continue.
Yeah, they like to continue, because a bully's dream is not when they're bullying someone for them to be like bully them back or just say something back. They want them to feel pain for a reason. That's what I'm saying. In a classroom environment, when you have a popular person with a lot of friends and you have someone unpopular, let's say, again, use the overweight example, and you call that person fat, all his friends won't be like, oh, what are you doing? Because he's a cool person. They'll be like going on it, like, yeah, you're fat. I would say that's almost getting to a point where I'll be like, okay, remove this classroom environment, put that in the corporate world, and you have this like popular, a boss, for example, and people under him, and him bullying one person way under him. I think that is within the rights for that person to take him to court. If he's, let's say a fat janitor, and like the people working there start calling him fat and they joke about it and he doesn't like it and they continue, I think that person is well within his rights to take that person to court for bullying. Simple as that. I wouldn't say, because in your context, freedom of speech, that would not be, that would just be wiped up.
So far in this conversation, the last whatever, if it's half an hour or 40 minutes, I don't know,
I've always
known exactly which point whether I agreed or disagreed with someone's point. And now that you brought up this example,
mm-hmm.
where it's in a place where you're paid to work as a janitor, mm-hmm. so the people bullying you have power over you in a way that's kind of difficult and complicated and real. Now I'm in a position where I think I don't know what I think.
Mm.
I don't know if I agree with you or if I disagree, because you found the gray area for me, which is impressive, because I thought at the beginning of this conversation that I'd know exactly whether I agreed or disagreed with any point that would come up. And so that's really cool to me, because that is a gray area. Because how do you cope with the fact that bullying or speech in a way is fine? However, there's some power at play.
Mm.
And to hold someone's employment over them and then also call them fat at the same time, it's difficult. And I don't know what to say about that.
In your world, you would just say, just quit then. But janitors, it's not like jobs are like flying around.
It's
like,
not that simple.
It's not that simple. So they have to stay in that job and they're getting bullied. And they don't like it. They don't want to be friends with them. Because let's be honest, like if you're a janitor and your boss is calling you fat, you can't be like, and say something back to them. Like that's not that kind of relationship. The relationship is you've got a lot less power than them and they're just clouding over you, proper alphaing you and like bullying you and everyone in the office because they're their boss as well. They kind of don't say anything, but they kind of join in. Some may join in, some may not do anything. And I think that's bullying. Yeah. And I think that within law, that person should be allowed to take the boss to court for harassment reasons or bullying reasons or whatever. But if that's where I would draw the line.
Because I think whether you express it as we've just done in terms of, you know, the power relation or as just a second ago when I was talking about like the proximity to the community that's joking, I think more or less they're the same, that they're very similar, right? Like this group has power over this individual. This individual has got a, you know, quite a distance. There's no proximity between this individual and this group, right? These are similar issues. And what you're saying then is and it's directed, which is something we've talked about a few times now. The direction of it, the nature of it, the power play, the distance from the community, you're saying that is the ground. And to bring back to my question about, you know, hate speech, perhaps this isn't hate speech, this is bullying. Okay, that's another question to ask. But that is ground for criminal action or, yes. You know, prosecution at that point.
I'd want to go to the janitor and ask him, why do you let them do this? I want to shake him and say, why do you fucking let them do this? Because it's not, because you shouldn't stick around if this is how you're treated. And that's the difficult point, because that's as simple as it gets. The janitor allows himself to be bullied. And this is, I bring this up because I know that this is actually quite an insensitive thing to say. This is what you'd classify as victim bullying, like victim blaming. I'm blaming the janitor for being bullied. And it comes to mind, and I think it's worth talking about because that's to me the most interesting part of it. The thing that is kind of taboo to say this, or to say that the janitor is not in a way at fault, but that the janitor should leave.
Yeah, but then I think this is where the power play comes in and the economic dependency of the janitor in this scenario.
Yeah.
You know, I think, less so now, but you know, there's a question to ask. Well, with abusive relationships, and I know that can go in a number of directions. I know that things are changing in these grounds. But let's say we take a woman that has been abused at home. She's suffering all kinds of problems at home. And there is a real economic dependency there.
Mm-hmm.
I think that actually often when you ask this question, well, you know, why don't you just leave? I think very often there's a really clear answer to be given. And
financial reason
is one of them, you know.
That janitor, it's not like janitors can get jobs like that. You know, there's a reason he's a janitor. Low quality.
But not just that. Bart is also saying, I think, I'm putting words into Bart's mouth, that the janitor could stand up against him, like he could stand against the bullying, right?
Actually, what I want to clarify is that this is a part of the discussion where I haven't decided yet what I believe.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm making a point about that the janitor should stand up for himself,
mm-hmm,
because no one else is making that point.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to make that point so that it gets attacked, rightly so,
mm-hmm,
for the ways in which it is simplifying the situation.
Yeah.
But there is a point to be made, which is that you're rarely in a situation, if we're not talking about hypotheticals but about real life, you're rarely in a situation where you can't do anything. The janitor can do things. But there's also a point to be made about that the janitor is seriously a victim here. And he should be supported in some way. But how does this happen? Well, the janitor, in order to be supported by the government, will have to go to court with this. So whatever you do, if you want to get rid of bullying, or if you're in a relationship that's abusive and you want to get rid of it, you have to act in a way. And you have to make it known to other people for them to be able to help you. So before you get to that stage of actually being helped or being supported or some kind of laws intervening, you have to act. You can't just sit and let stuff happen to you.
Well, you can say, let's say you don't want to implement this sort of bullying idea within law, what you'd have to do is put a lot of power within corporations themselves to decide. So for example, the janitor would go somewhere above that particular boss in the corporation, and that corporation would have like a sort of a almost like their own court system where they'll decide what happens to this person.
So that would be, it would be a HR
complaint. It'd be HR complaint, exactly. And that's how probably normally people would deal with this. But I'm saying if someone's really high up, And my scenario is, if you can ignore that, you could say someone, you know, any. So let's say that boss, so what I'm drawing the line is, let's say that boss made a joke about fat people within a group of people, and that janitor happened to be in the room, right? I don't think that's bullying, right? If he points at him and continuously, or not even like starts bullying him and talking about, like, say, calling him fat, that's bullying, right? But then I'm not completely convinced that that person has to go to court, because then when you make this sort of idea of bullying, then, for example, let's take the fat nature. Let's, Oiva's Christian, right? Let's say I'm Oiva's boss and I try and talk to you about Christianity. You might take offense to that. And if I'm completely directly referring to you, where does, in the law system, they draw the line? They say you talked about Christianity in the bad way. Let's say I say Jesus fucking Christ. You might take real offense to that and be like, you're really hurt. Where do we draw the line? Where do we draw the line upon whether it's religion, whether it's the way they look, whether it's anything, race, sexuality, gender? Like, where do you draw the line? If you're talking to someone below you, they're a transgender person, and you're kind of like just talking about it, and you're being a little bit sort of blasé and sort of slightly offensive, can they take you to court because they got hurt by it?
Yeah, so I mean, like, I'm just trying to get my head away around the way the conversations moved there. So we were considering the kind of these power relationships, yeah. Right? And it seemed to me your point before was certainly that there's a case to be made that this is bullying.
Yeah. Right?
And now what you're asking is
where
is the exact line?
So because this is what we're having right now. Before homosexuals used to be oppressed, right? But now the society's gradually accepted them within society, right? So when we have these sort of factors, eventually society seems to be adding more and more things that are acceptable. I think I can make that generic statement.
You know, we're liberalizing.
We're liberalizing more and more.
Rate, right? Yeah, yeah.
As we liberalize more and more, there's more chance of people getting offended more and more. Because people are becoming more and more equal. Before, gays were below them. If you make a gay joke, they're not...
Right, so that's interesting, right? It seems there needs to be a certain degree of respect that's afforded to you, yeah, for it even be possible for you to take offense.
Yeah.
Right? Like before, you make a gay joke 50 years ago, you know, there's not even a structure in place, a discourse in place, yeah, that you could say, well, that guy's offended,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
That just wasn't even a possibility for you.
Because, again, that's a power play, isn't it? That's, yeah, a power play. Whether that was whites and blacks. Whites use the N-word all the time when there was that's the whole battle I'm talking about. Now we're incorporating more and more, we're liberalizing more and more, meaning there's more chance
you can offend
someone. Yeah. Where is this going to be, to a point where we're kind of going for free speech, but we're having the opposite result, if you like?
It's as if liberalizing more and more causes us to actually take a 180.
Yeah.
And where once, where we started out intending to protect more and more people's ability to exist in the way they see fit, and now it's gone to such extremes where, in order to protect people's ability to live whichever way they see fit, we actually have to stop them from saying certain things because now it's clashing with the way other people want to live. So at what point is something that's supposed to be liberal going to turn into something that's authoritarian?
Mm-hmm.
Where we're forced to say things instead of simply forced not to say things, but where we have to live by certain rules, that's actually becoming more restrictive. Is that right? Is that an okay progress to make? Yeah, to start restricting
the
way we live?
I definitely agree that there is that kind of underside, that as we liberalize, there's a larger list of things that we can't say. And I guess what you're saying is there's also a distinction between when you're made to say something, right? It seems, okay, you can't use these words, but you have to use these words now, right? That's a distinction there. But I guess my point would be that, it, like I was saying a second ago, it wouldn't even have been possible for those communities to take offense to those words until then, right? Like, it's this space that we've opened for them to take offense is just the kind of the necessary aftermath of opening up a space for them. And so I don't know if I agree that there seems to me to be a big question to say, well, okay, you can stop people from saying things, but can we put words in people's mouths? But if that's what it takes to open up this space for these communities, I feel like I'm willing to accept that for the most part. Right, so I guess to wrap up then, so the discussion was, is nothing sacred anymore? Sacred, we weren't thinking too much about religion there. We were thinking about, you know, just something that shouldn't be joked with. The discussion then just tended towards this, you know, can we joke about absolutely anything we want? What are the kind of conditions of possibility for joking about something? And it seems to me that broadly speaking, we were saying nothing is off limits as far as the joke's concerned, but what does matter is location, but more importantly, the kind of beliefs that that individual has. That seems to me roughly the points that we raised. And then there was a big discussion about freedom of speech. I don't know. Yeah, go for it, guys. Anything?
I think there was a big speech on like right to might. Is there a good joke anyone can crack, whatever the situation really, as long as that... that you know, that joke really hits the target, then it's good. And if there is a real reason for joking, then it really works.
Yeah, just joking as
well. The whole point is, I think the real thing is that if you're joking, you're taking a big risk, or you're taking a risk mm-hmm. every time you joke, for it to be misconstrued or people not to find it funny and find it offensive.
It's the individual's opinion. Is it worth to take the risk?
Joke's responsibility.
Yeah,
that joke's misunderstood. Again, it's tricky. I mean, I don't really know what I'm still really undecided after this conversation on what I really believe.
Yes, you see, I think I'm pretty set that, you know, I'm all for a space in which you can joke unconditionally. I think when you go to see Jimmy Carr, you know what you're signing up for. I don't think that those are the kinds of jokes that really should be made in public. I put some weight on location. And it's a lot about, you know, the person that's making the joke as well. And these things are hard to judge, but I think that for the most part, you know, society kind of measures itself in that regard.
Mm-hmm. I think it was very curious how much it affects the jokeability if we are in a private or a public sphere. That's quite fascinating to me.
What I got stuck on was when it comes to if there's power at play, because then a joke means more than just the contents of it. It's there's an inference, or there's an implication underneath it, which is asserting some kind of dominance. Especially if there is a discrepancy in power or a differential in power, that the whole situation gets very complicated. Even for me, and I thought I'd be very set on this whole issue and say that everything is okay. And that's where I got stuck, and I thought that was probably the most interesting part of the conversation.
Yeah, definitely. And I think, for me, the real take home is that, you know, I think joking builds relationships. But I think to a certain extent, there has to be a relationship for the joke. And I think that for me, the take home is you need to be a little bit careful about the extent to which the individual is brought into the group. And as you said, Bart, you know, the when guys and maybe girls as well, you know, when we test each other with jokes, there has to be that sensitivity to, you know, is this person receptive to this or not? And it, I think, you know, that it really does come down to the you know, just having a real feel for the impact that the joke makes.
Matt, it's a pleasure that you were here. You are slightly less boring than I thought you'd be. So I guess that's good enough.
Yeah, well, yeah. Thank you. I'm glad to hear that.
So. Yeah, thank you for coming, Matt.
So to the listeners of this podcast, yes, it's been basically a year. So this is...
Pregnancy is...
it's a bitch, man. Yeah. It's a bitch. Yeah. My body is screwed up for life. Yeah. I'm trying to get back in shape, but all this fat that I just accumulated from that baby. Oh, man.
Yeah.